time for Microbrew, the Milwaukee Brewers podcast from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and on the other line is Kurt Hoge, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Kurt, the Milwaukee Brewers are kind of where we left them, although it felt like a little bit of a roller coaster this week. They go 3-3. They do take a game leading off the series with the Los Angeles Dodgers, 3-7, not bad. Even after two blowouts earlier in the week to close out that series in L.A., that's fine. The Dodgers are great, so that's okay. But then they have a really rough loss on Friday against the Cubs at home, continuing a string of brutal play against the bottom three teams in the Central. They do bounce back, though. They win a couple games. Sunday, in particular, I think, kind of encouraging the way the bats sprung to life. So, Kurt, if you had asked me Friday after that game, I know you were there. I was there as a fan in a group outing, and that to me felt like the spiritual end of the pursuit of a playoff spot for the Brewers, even though I realized there's plenty of time and plenty of games to go. Felt like it just wasn't ever going to happen. Then these next two games happen, and now I'm back a little bit. You know, they I think I'm out, and they pull me back in. So how do you overall, you know, sort of rate where the Brewers are? They didn't lose or gain ground this week relative to the Padres. How do you sort of rate where they are after this week?
Well, here's what they did, JR. They finally beat bad teams, or a bad sure. team. They beat up on the Rockies coming out of the All-Star break. But it's just been a rough stretch against teams that they have to beat for the last couple of months now. And that's honestly the reason why they're in this position. They haven't beaten the Reds like they should. They haven't beaten the Pirates like they should. They haven't beaten the Cubs like they should. And now they get a shot, a little bit of redemption against the Pirates after a sweep at PNC earlier in the month. So if they, I still think if they, looking at their schedule now, if they are able to take care of business and pretty much win every series against these teams that are well below them in the standings, they don't control their own destiny per se, because they're a game and a half back of the wild card, but it feels like if they win those series, they will control their destiny.
Yeah, the Brewers finally got some help on Sunday with both the Phillies and the Padres losing at the same time as the Brewers winning. As we record this, the Cardinals-Braves game that's supposed to be Sunday night in a rain delay. Unclear if this game even gets played. But if they gain a half game, it'll be the first time in over 2 weeks. This would be day 15 that the Brewers have not gained in the NL Central race. Either they lose or the days they win, the Cardinals also win. It has been maddening. I think the Central's over. I don't think there's any way you could say the Brewers have what it takes to catch the Cardinals. Six games back is a heavy road to hoe. I will point out that in 2018, that's exactly how many games they were back at the end of August when they caught the Chicago Cubs. They got on an absolute thrill ride in September. I know a lot of people look forward to September, to Craig Tember, Craig Counsell pushing all the right buttons in both 2018 and 2019. I would also point out, very different circumstances those years. There was an August trade deadline for one. You could use your entire 40-man. There was no three-batter minimum for relief pitchers. So those factors, I think, are all working against Craig Counsell being able to replicate that sort of force of will. But I guess you don't know. Are you, as you watch the standings and watch this team, do you even think about the NL Central anymore? I mean, you can't rule it out completely, but it's feeling a little bleak there, Kurt.
Yeah, you don't rule it out. But honestly, I haven't even when I scoreboard check, it isn't really even involving the Cardinals right now. So subconsciously, I guess I've just kind of put that one in the back of the mind, and maybe if they sneak within four games, I think is probably the shouting distance there, three games or so. There's still a handful of games left against the Cardinals, but they'll need to do maybe not sweep all of them, but make out pretty nice in those in order to make up some ground, kind of like they did with the Cubs down the stretch in 2018 when they erased a lot of ground there. So yeah, the Central race, I mean, the Cardinals can't play this well forever, but they've played really well for a really long time. And until that changes, then I don't think my assessment of the division is going to change. But hey, there's still those two wild card spots up for grabs. And it's amazing. You win two games to close out the series against the Cubs, and you have a 500 week that involved playing against the Dodgers, and you gain a ground on the Padres and the Phillies, and all of a sudden it's looking much more attainable. And so we'll see. We'll reassess tomorrow at about 10:30 p.m. Central time.
Yeah, the Cardinals, it doesn't matter how many trades they would have made at the trade deadline. I don't really believe anymore that the Brewers would still be in the mix with the Cardinals. I mean, I guess you could convince me that they could have won three or four games that they didn't win since August 1st, and that would put them right back in there with them. But Cardinals are on one, man. They're just bludgeoning teams that they're supposed to beat. Their schedule is super beneficial, and they are making the absolute most of it. They just aren't losing at all, and they don't have hardly any games left against winning teams. I want to say they have 10 games left against winning teams, including four against the Brewers. So, you know, if Milwaukee wins three of four, win the season series against the Cardinals, or maybe, you know, somehow sweep those four games, then they're back in it. But it doesn't feel realistic at all. And congrats to the Cardinals on that front. Like, they have an MVP candidate, and by candidate, I mean the guy who's going to win MVP, barring an injury, to be honest, in Paul Goldschmidt. Nolan Arenado right there as well. And their pitching staff did the job. They made the moves they had to make. They got Jordan Montgomery. They got Jose Quintana. Those guys have been good for them in August. Montgomery in particular has been completely lights out. So they were able to make the trades. The Brewers, people are still talking about the Josh Hader trade, understandably, as sort of a pivot point. But we had another just fascinating data point on Sunday. Josh Hader hadn't pitched in another really long stretch. He's barely appeared for the Padres. He winds up giving up six runs and got one out. Another just nightmare outing for Josh Hader. And, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because, you know, I don't want to kick a, you know, beat a dead horse. Like, this is just the way it's gone for him. It's been catastrophic. But more than that, like, that's huge for the Brewers. They need the Padres to lose games. The Padres are now the Phillies, I guess, are close to the Brewers. But, like, the Padres are the team you got to catch. You got to be cheering, if you're a Brewers fan, for the Padres to lose games. And Josh Hader's struggles is absolutely part of that. They have a vulnerable bullpen. They have a vulnerable lot of things right now. So, another crazy outing. I can't wrap my mind around it, Kurt. I mean, this is a guy who had 25 saves before he'd given up three runs. He'd given up two runs and had 25 saves at one point this year. He did not allow a run in April or May. He can't even get through an outing. I don't think it's injury related. I don't know, but this is I mean, even if the Brewers saw it coming, no one could have seen this coming. This, like, complete fall off a cliff from a guy who's been so dominant for several years in a row. I mean, what do you say about it? What do you think about this?
How about this? The Brewers, who, and by all accounts, should have probably, you know, added more at the trade deadline, but were chastised for basically standing pat, all things considered, if not selling more than they bought at the deadline. Their best move ended up being trading Josh Hader away to their top wild card competitor. It's the trade that continues to take endless twists and turns. It's hard to tell what's wrong with him other than you watch him and something's clearly off. I think there's definitely some mechanics that are off, and he's been a guy who's had so much success pitching one way, and so all of a sudden now that it just seems to be spiraling. You know, a couple bad outings lead to a couple more bad outings, and all of a sudden now he's, you know, in mop-up duty essentially, and can't get two outs before giving up six base runners against the Royals. I can't remember seeing an elite player fall this far off a cliff so quickly. It's kind of reminiscent in a way to when Derek Turnbow just forgot how to throw strikes in, what was that, 2005 or 2006, but Derek Turnbow was never Josh Hader. He didn't win three reliever of the year awards. In May, JR, we were talking about him as a possible Cy Young.
Cy Young. Yeah, I feel crazy bringing that up. But I mean, we knew that was like a ridiculous long shot, but it was at least worth discussing.
Right. I mean, there was talk of, okay, if he keeps his ERA under one this year and there's no front runner, like it's, and that was a legitimate possibility at the time. That's how dominant he was. It's seriously crazy. And we talked about this too when we tried to break down the trade. I think it was in our emergency pod was, okay, let's think about this a bit rationally a bit. The Brewers probably could have gotten this prospect haul in the offseason, right? If they trade the version of Josh Hader that everyone has seen for the last 4 or 5 years. But what if they think that they're not going to get that version of Josh Hader the rest of the year? Then you do the trade now. And so I think you're starting to see a lot of that come through. Maybe they certainly didn't expect him to be this bad. I don't think anyone could have seen this coming in a million years. But there were some concerns before the deadline where he did not look like Josh Hader. So it's quite fortuitous.
Yeah, his ERA is over 16 starting in July with the Brewers when we started to see some cracks in the foundation. Really, that day, Seiya Suzuki on July 4th hit that inside the park home run against him. Brewers end up winning that game. But that was kind of the beginning of a really rough stretch. And you know, like having for as important as he was for the Brewers, I mean, there's still, at least for me anyway, there, you know, there's, you want to see him do well. Like, you want to see him perform. And I still believe that next year, if he's still with the Padres, which is not a given, but if he is, which I'm guessing he probably will be, I still think he'll be effective. I think he'll figure it out. Somebody will work with him and they'll be able to fix what ails him. But you know, like the difference with, I think with Turnbow and other pitchers who have sort of lost it, it has come down to being able to throw strikes. You know, it's either a mental thing or the mechanics are so out of whack that you just can't, you know, you can't consistently get the ball in the zone. Well, for him, I mean, he's getting hit. I mean, he's also struggling throwing balls in the zone. He is also giving up walks at a much higher rate than we're used to, but he's also just getting pounded. And that's so surprising to me. I mean, the guy is just, you know, smoking, you know, even if he doesn't throw 99 miles an hour, people really struggle to hit that ball. Like, there were a lot of swings and misses, and we're just not seeing that anymore. It's a wild turn of events, and it really is kind of forced everybody to sort of reevaluate. Now there's another aspect to the trade deadline that took a turn and not in Milwaukee's favor if you're trying to keep score on the trade deadline machinations, and that's Trevor Rosenthal. He had been pitching in the minor leagues. Yeah, it went bad. He, of course, has not pitched in Major League Baseball since 2020. He'd had a hamstring injury, and so he was working back from that. And in his first outing, I believe, was normal, and then had a couple really, really rough ones, came back to Milwaukee to be evaluated, and he has a lat issue or teres muscle issue that is similar to the injury Freddie Peralta suffered. He's going to be out for the rest of the year. I mean, I guess there's optimism that he comes back, but at this point, come on. He hasn't pitched since 2020. He's not coming back in 2022 during the regular season and almost certainly beyond that, so... This is a move that doesn't work out. Now, you could argue that it was a low-risk move. I don't think most Brewers people would do that. I mean, Tristan Peters, you know, it's not like Tristan Peters was a guy who was going to be, you know, had to be added to the 40-man or was going to be lost to free agency next year. That's not the position he was in. He was having a very nice year. He's not a, you know, top 10 prospect, maybe not even top 20, but he wasn't nobody. And for a guy who had an injury history, and oh, turns out the injury is definitely, or injury, not the same injury issue, but like it's going to keep him from pitching for the Brewers at all. Feels like this was a pretty big miss, and I don't really know, you know, I don't know if you can just blame injuries, but man, the Brewers team was supposed to, like, the one thing they did was supposedly fix, you know, improve their bullpen overall. I'm not sure we've seen that, and definitely with Rosenthal not pitching, I'm definitely not seeing that. This is a tough one, Kurt. I don't know how you think about this one.
Yeah, it's a swing and a miss. There's some serious bad luck involved in it. Although the first injury the first injury I guess he suffered was the thoracic outlet surgery he had in 2021, but then the first injury, you know, is that since his time with the Brewers was the hamstring strain that the Brewers knew about when they traded for him, which is sort of the perplexing thing. So you're, you know, banking on a month of a guy, and I'm not sure Tristan Peters is. I don't think he moves the needle necessarily as a prospect, but still, you did give up a possible, you know, a possible piece who had been hitting really well. But it's just the process of it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I know they really, really liked Rosenthal's stuff, but the big thing the reason why it's a swing and a miss now is you knew you were taking on a lot of risk with a guy with injury history who then all of a sudden has his hamstring strain. You don't know how exactly he's going to come back from that. I mean, he hasn't pitched in the majors since 2020, and so, but by taking him on, they didn't add, there was no more room, I guess, to add anyone else. Like, that was the move they made besides basically the Matt Bush trade.
I mean, they aren't able to keep Lamet on the roster because Trevor Rosenthal is there.
Well,
among others, but.
Rosenthal wasn't on the active roster, though, so that was... When they had right. to DFA Lamet.
Oh, you're right. They had to DFA
more Jake
him.
McGee,
yes.
Which we've talked about at nauseam, yes. I feel like.
You're right. My bad.
But
my
that's
bad.
Another.
Right.
No, that, I mean, that's another kind of sort of just question mark that pops up around it. And, you know, like, they hitched their wagons to Rosenthal being healthy. And so it didn't really turn out. Now they do have Taylor Rogers as well. But that was at the time sort of like a kind of a, you know, an eye for an eye swap for Hader. So basically, it was Matt Bush is the only guy that is. Was left as an addition to the bullpen because by, you know, getting Rosenthal, I guess that was what they figured they were done after that. And probably could use a couple more pieces around the team right about now.
Yeah, we'll talk about one of the pieces they did add on Sunday. He had a nice day, that being Garrett Mitchell. We're going to get there in a little bit. But, you know, this bullpen, the whole point was to have it so strengthened that you didn't really have guys that you couldn't truly rely on in any sort of leverage situation. Yet I still feel like, you know, Jason Alexander, I mean, has made the most of his opportunities, but I don't think that's a guy that you want to trust in a high leverage spot. I think Peter Strzelecki is getting there, which, I mean, he's kind of been kind of a... It's kind of been one of the big success stories of the year, but I don't know if you're there yet. I feel like, you know, Brad Boxberger's had his struggles this year. Brent Suter's actually been really, really good lately, but I feel like you got the same bullpen you had before. And yeah, maybe that's a plus because Josh Hader maybe goes way south and actually maintaining what you had before is fine. But again, we're talking about a team that did not improve at the trade deadline. I mean, that's just how it's borne out. It was everyone's fear. And I feel like it's at least for a month, which is not a huge sample, but kind of borne out. Matt Bush has been okay. He's been good. He did give up a home run in one of the games on Friday against the Cubs. That was kind of costly, but he's been okay. We did see Adrian Hauser come back from injury on, I believe that was Wednesday that he made his return against the Los Angeles Dodgers. It went very, very badly. Adrian Hauser has struggled pretty much all year long, and the injury was kind of the latest chapter. I assume he would have been ready to make that start whether or not Aaron Ashby was available, but of course Ashby goes on the IL, so maybe there's a little bit of a rush there to get Adrian Hauser back on the mound. But Kurt, he's always been a little enigmatic to me. It's always hard to pin down Adrian Hauser. There are stretches where he's very successful and stretches where he's not. I don't know if I can expect that. You know, he can go out there and give you six or seven innings and keep you in a game right now. And that's a holdover from what he was before. You know, you got to give a little bit of time to get his footing back. But how concerned, I guess, should people be with Adrian Hauser as long as he's got a spot in this rotation?
Yeah, to me, I thought it was a little bit telling that clearly Hauser was ready to start a major league game by, you know, Wednesday, because they started him. This team would not have put him in that position if he wasn't ready and kind of, you know, completed what he needed to complete on his rehab. Yet they didn't seem, you know, they were in no rush to, you know, promote him or end his rehab assignment. I mean, they were kind of drawing that out to its end, it seemed, until Aaron Ashby got hurt. And then all right, we need someone to start Wednesday. Adrian Hauser, you're the guy. And, you know, look at his profile, you look at his career overall numbers, and you think you should get a solid number four. Yeah, like a number four, maybe number five, I guess, big league starter out of it at worst that can kind of eat innings. But the interesting thing, JR, is he's either been like a number three starter or, you know, even like last year, then kind of looking at the ERA, which I guess was a little better than like the underlying numbers would say. But like that's number two starter numbers. Like a 3-2 ERA is top of the rotation stuff. That's what Brandon Woodruff's doing this year. So there's that end of it. And then the other end is it's rough. It's bad. It's what this year's been. It's what 2020 was. So there has never been like a middle ground with him, despite the fact that you kind of look at him as a pitcher and you think the middle ground would be kind of right where he is, that 4.2, 4.1 ERA kind of guy that, you know, can give you 5-6 innings and dive and, you know, quality starts. And it just hasn't quite clicked. The sinker command really hasn't been sharp at all for much of the year. Never quite developed a lot of out pitches for lefties. I wonder if the Brewers tinker with the arsenal a little bit, but they're going to need him to make starts. You know, there's not really any other option until Aaron Ashby comes back.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also a little unfair to look at the one outing against the Los Angeles Dodgers and
think,
and try to extrapolate that the Dodgers put on a whooping there on Tuesday and Wednesday against the Brewers. But you know, Hauser struggles notable all year long, and they're gonna need something out of him here before the end of the season. They'll especially, like you said, if Ashby's sidelined, he is going to be needed. All right, Garrett Mitchell makes his major league debut on Saturday night, then Sunday plays his first game as a starter. He gets his first big league hit, drives in two runs, gives the Brewers the lead, hustle double to second base, part of a big inning for the Brewers. They do end up taking some consternation at the end, but they do end up winning that game by those two runs, 9-7 against Chicago to win that series. And like we've talked about, gain a game on their two closest rivals in the playoff spot. So big spot for Garrett Mitchell. Super interesting to me that he's here for a number of reasons. One is, if you had told me they were promoting a center fielder to finally add to this team, which is something I think you and I, either off mic, on mic, have thought would be something that would help them for many, many weeks at this point. I totally would have believed it was Sal Frelick, who is absolutely crushing AAA. Now, Garrett Mitchell has been in the organization longer, sort of, but, you know, didn't really play in the minors in 2020 because of the whole pandemic thing. And he has been playing center field more than Frelick has, but both of them are, you know, left-handed bats, thought of as center fielders. So I really just thought they would go with the more productive guy. Now, Mitchell's been productive. He's had a really good stretch since they promoted him to AAA, actually. Double A, he didn't have this level of success. And then he comes up and performs pretty well, has the big moment. So I know you talked to David Stearns a little bit, tried to sort of get a feel for why Mitchell over Frelick, or for that matter, Esturi Ruiz, who's known for his speed and could be a good element. Jonathan Davis going on the IL, so he's not out of the picture yet, but certainly you got to feel like they upgraded at least at the backup spot and possibly someone who can fight Tyrone Taylor for some starting time as well. Give me your thoughts on Garrett Mitchell being here and what you've seen in the limited sample we've gotten from him so far.
He's gives you a little bit different of a look than Tyrone Taylor in center, which is interesting because, you know, Taylor's going to be sort of a low OBP, high chase guy who plays, you know, solid center field and hits for power. Whereas Mitchell's more of a contact-oriented guy, although the strikeout numbers were elevated at least earlier this year. And just tons of speed, a lot of flair out there, and is an electric. And he's really an electric player. So I do think kind of having to read between the lines a little bit in the comments from Stearns and Craig Counsell, they like his defensive ability in center field. The extra year, David Stearns did say this, the extra year that Mitchell has as a pro player and getting to spend some time in big league camp and getting that experience this year, did play a factor in them deciding to take him over Frelick. There's just a little more experience, a little more seasoning there, where, you know, and while Frelick can still play every day at AAA. So yeah, it's I'm sure it was a difficult decision, and Ruiz is in the mix there as well, although I think they were really looking to add a left-handed bat to give whoever they were going to call it playing time. So it could be a big upgrade. Brewers obviously haven't gotten, maybe not a big upgrade, a big marginal upgrade, if that isn't a direct contrast of one another there.
Thoughts? Yeah. But any marginal upgrade is good, yeah, at this point, though. Yeah, they're in a playoff.
As far as marginal upgrades go, it could be a significant one because they just have gotten nothing out of Jonathan Davis offensively for a month and a half, and Taylor has struggled as well. So, you know, Garrett Mitchell just providing what he can with his skill set could give the Brewers a boost. I don't necessarily think it's like the big, you know, jolt of life, you know, a big addition to the clubhouse because a guy, you know, kind of did get injured for it. And it's not like, you know, say a Corbin Carroll level player that got called up to the Diamondbacks. So it's definitely exciting to kind of see the first player of this, you know, next crop of young offensive position player talent that the Brewers have coming up. And there will be more. We mentioned Frelick, Ruiz, Weimer, Jackson Chourio, who has been mentioned once or twice. Once or twice.
Yeah. Actually homered on Sunday, back in the lineup.
It's in the tweet thread, baby.
Yes, Jackson Chourio homered. He was out for a couple weeks with the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers sideline, but he is back. That's very nice. I think I probably should have just read more into the Brewers playing Mitchell twice as much as Sal Frelick in center field at AAA at Nashville as an indication of who they might call up if they were looking to upgrade at center field, which is the obvious spot on the diamond that could have used a boost. So feel like I maybe missed the sign on that one, but Garrett Mitchell, now a big leaguer, and you know, maybe it's marginal. I agree with you, but it might be something that just changes a little bit of the dynamic, the spark. I am not a big believer, as I've said before, in the intangible clubhouse vibes per se in how they translate on the field. But if you're a believer in that, this could be something to help. Before we get to three up, three down, jump real quickly to Devin Williams. He had a nice performance on Sunday. Friday, he came into a tie game and gave up a home run that ended up being very costly against Ian Happ. But it's been a little up and down for him. And I wanted to ask you about something. This is another thing that I don't really buy into, the idea that a closer mentality is something that you truly need. I think pretty much anybody who gets to the big league level has a mentality that they can pitch a ninth inning of a major game and not struggle with it. And I think Devin Williams, for the most part, has shown that he can do that too. But there is, I guess, a little bit of concern that he might have been just really comfortable in that eighth inning role and allowed him to be truly, truly dominant, whereas now he's maybe a little bit less so. Like I said, I don't really buy into that, but what do you think of that? I'm sure there is something to having a closer that is just a little bit wired differently to handle that situation a little bit differently. I think Devin Williams can do it, but he is also an emotional guy. We've talked about that before. Like maybe it's not perfect for him. So how do you, when someone brings that up, how do you respond to that?
I think the emotion plays right into it in a good way. Like, I think Devin Williams is so confident in himself out there. I don't know. I don't particularly think there's any, he's just had a couple rougher outings in a ninth inning role. And it's not like we've never seen him struggle in the eighth inning before either. He's just, you know, he hung a changeup to Ian Happ. The outing that was rough was last Saturday when the Cubs were fouling everything off and didn't have any swing and a miss. Right. But his command was a little off there. I just think this is a slight blip on the radar. I don't attribute it to anything with a ninth inning.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm glad we're kind of in agreement on that. I know some people will, but not how I look at it. All right, let's move into some of the more granular details from the week. It is three up, three down. Christian Yelich.
Yes, I can't believe we went 30 minutes and we didn't say his name.
Dude, Christian Yelich was on one Saturday and Sunday. He had four hits on Saturday. He hit a monster home run. He homered in a second straight game. On Sunday, he had three hits, I believe, a fourth hit that he should have had, but, you know, Nico Horner, props
Nico
to you.
Nico Horner happens, yeah.
Insane play to the shift. I mean,
if he does not get a gold glove, we'll do the same thing we did when Lorenzo Cain did it in one. There'll be a riot.
Pitchforks and torches and whatnot. I can't tell you anything about second base gold gloves, so I have no idea, but let's give it to him. Christian Yelich, I mean, honest to God, looked like the vintage Christian Yelich that we have not seen in a long time. And I am in no way throwing out the, ooh, is Christian Yelich back? Like after two games, I'm not doing
no,
that at all.
No, but don't lie. You are absolutely throwing that. That is what you want. That is what you're doing here. You want
that is what I'm doing.
Back. Yes, you're not, that's what you're I'm not doing. Answering it, but you're just asking questions.
I'm just asking questions. Christian, how dare you call me out on this? I'm just asking questions. Christian Yelich back? Question mark.
Yeah, you were just about to propose that very question to me. I know you.
I am not going to ask you that because it is three up, three down. We're just making observations.
Just here.
We're not even asking questions. He was awesome. And if you were to tell me that this is the start of something really good for him, you should do that. Obviously we've been burned. We've been down this road a million times. No one can make that assessment after such a small sample of games. But you know, I see those swings, those home run swings, and I think, how does he not homer every other time? Because it is so easy and so smooth. And there are so many pitches put right there. And, you know, in 2018, 2019, they were all driven out of the ballpark. And most of this year and the previous couple of years, they're fouled off. And we finally saw that not happen. You know, looking good to all fields. So Christian Yelich, probably not back, but back, question mark?
Yeah, it's interesting because the thing that gives you a little hope that it's still in there, if you're a Brewers fan, is he goes on these stretches, these multi-game stretches where it's not just a homer here, you know, and then, you know, a walk there and then a homer two games later and then maybe a double the next game. It's every at bat is hard hit balls. And this is probably what, the third or fourth time this year he's gone through a similar stretch. In the last two games, everything he's hitting is squared up where it looks like, yeah, that's the guy. That is the guy. Leonardo DiCaprio meme.
Pointing at like, the TV, yes.
I know that swing. So I think I said this previously on the podcast, though. Like, the thing is, it's just been – he hasn't been able to sustain it, you know, for even like a week at any stretch. He's had good stretches, but finding a way to sustain – and not even like 2019 levels, but like, you know, continue to have this similar – swings and results with how hard he's hitting the ball. We just haven't seen it over an extended period of time.
All right, what do you got? You got one for three up, three down?
All right, I got you. Starting pitching, aside from, you know, I think we can kind of write off a Corbin Burnes blow up a little bit. The starting pitching has started to look much better. I say this, of course, while also Adrian Hauser had a blow up start, but
yeah, and Eric Lauer was just okay on Sunday.
Eric Lauer was okay on Sunday, but I don't think he was awful by any means. He was really good against the Dodgers again. He is their kryptonite. Mm-hmm. But I think the big thing is Freddy Peralta looks like Freddy Peralta again. Took a no hitter into the sixth. We had to, was going to take a no hitter into the seventh and was pulled. Can't believe we didn't mention that yet. A little fatigue from the flight, but late night flight back from LA. So they pulled him at 82 pitches. And of course, you know what happens. They go to run homer three batters later for the first hit of the game. And then Brandon Woodruff, 10 strikeouts on Saturday. He's looked like himself. I mean, if you get, you know, capital F Freddy Peralta and capital B Brandon Woodruff the rest of the season, you know, you like the chances.
All right, I'm going to, for my second one, cheat and go back to this game. Those six no-hit innings for Freddy Peralta, excellent stuff. And the Brewers have done that before. Adrian Hauser, I think it was last year, had six no-hit innings, and Craig Counsell pulled him. Now, in that case, Adrian Hauser said he was fatigued. He wasn't able to go back out. He had a little bit even a higher pitch count than Freddy Peralta, who I believe was at 82 pitches or 84. And so it was clear that he wasn't going to go all nine innings. With Freddy, it wasn't abundantly clear that he wasn't going to be able to get at least to the eighth or ninth, and it was kind of a surprise when he came out. I'm interested in your thoughts in post game. It sounds like Freddie said, yeah, he was tired, but he could have done it. This is the second time a flight has been blamed for a reason to not put a guy in a game with Taylor Rogers earlier this year. I find that a little weird. Like, that's not normally something you hear. That sounds like it could be a substitute for something else, but you know, I don't know what's up with that. I don't know if Freddy Peralta looks like that and you say that he's fatigued after six innings. Like, I mean, was he really? That's incredible if he was. I don't know what your thoughts on him afterwards, if you thought he was a little frustrated that he didn't get to continue. I'm sure the results certainly lend themselves to frustration there, but Craig Counsell has taken some hits this year in the optics category, and I don't want to go down a whole managerial rabbit hole. That's saved for later. You know, this is, it's not the first time this has happened, and then they wind up losing the game. So it's kind of an interesting thing. What did you hear from Freddie after that?
Yeah, I mean, he wanted to go in the game, and I think he kind of was resigned to his fate at a certain point. I think there was enough of a push from Chris Hook and Craig Counsell, and those guys are generally, especially Hook, they're very good at seeing things in their pitchers. So I mean, you have to give them that. Granted, I didn't see it. You know, and if Freddie's feeling okay to go back out for the seventh, I don't. It's a tough call. It really is. Yeah. You know, he's not going to finish the no hitter. But the thing to me is, it's a one run game, and I feel like your best chance to win that game is Freddy Peralta going back out there. You know, some of he might not have been at his peak performance at that point, but. You know, if and it's tough because you only want to listen to a player in the heat of a game so much. They're not going to want to leave the game.
Right.
So it truly is a difficult spot. But it felt like, you know, maybe right there, getting him back out for the seventh would have. You know, Brewers might win that game if he goes back out there. But
yeah,
no,
it's tough. It's a 1-0 game. You know, you need that game. It's 1-0.
But it's also,
you've got these bullpen guys.
It's his fifth start back. You've got the bullpen lined up. And so, I don't know, it was an abundance of caution. And, you know, who knows exactly what the reasons behind it were other than,
yeah,
there was some fatigue there. So,
all right, you got another one, or are you, were you talking too much? Do you want me to go again?
Go again, and I'll wrap around.
Okay. So, where am I going with this? Oh, attended the game Friday as a fan experience here, as a part of a group outing. Many people know I'm an alumnus of Valparaiso University.
You
we had a Valpo
you went
night.
To Valpo?
I went to Valpo. What? We had a Valpo night, and we were in the party area just beyond the right field fence. Very, very cool place to take in a game. I had never done it before. I certainly encourage people, if they have a chance, to do so. Rowdy Tellez's game-tying home run in the ninth flew right over our heads. Ian Happ's home run came right to somebody I was talking to that night. So for whatever that's worth, great time. And just a really neat, different way to see American Family Field that I had not experienced before. Highly, highly recommend it. It was a tough scene. A lot of Cubs fans, because Valpo is in Northwest Indiana. You get a lot of Cubs fans, so it was not the most Brewers friendly environment for most of the night, but a great time. So that's all I got there. It was good stuff.
I'm happy for you, JR.
I know you are.
Good time.
I know you are.
We're just going to keep hammering Friday's game, apparently, because we have to mention the Cubs had two hits and they won that game. And they were both Ian Happ homers, two-run homers. Just a very quirky series of events. To only hit two, get two hits an entire game and to win that game is just...
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Brewers had a million opportunities, and they are a decent team with runners in scoring position, and they just could not get that hit on Friday.
It was bad. It was that felt. Actually, there's been a lot of games that have felt like the low. That did feel like the low.
It could be the worst loss of the year. There are many candidates, but it could be the one.
Last Saturday's was a bad one too, and then this one kind of superseded that. So, yep.
Yeah. Like I said, if you wanted to tell me that was the moment that it ended, you could. It's just mathematically not, you know, and unfortunately math is not emotional and not sexy. And there are so many times where I'd like to be able to say with certainty and finality that it's ended, but just too many games left. There's so many games left, and the Brewers can absolutely get back into it. And if San Diego plays like they did on Sunday, it's definitely up in the air. A couple more that does it, of course, for 3 up, 3 down. But a couple more. Keston Hira homered again on Monday. Man, getting him opportunities has paid off. He still strikes out a ton. I still think we probably have to revisit the signing of Andrew McCutchen and using up that DH spot sort of will be something that that we'll have to look back on and see how that ultimately impacted this 2022 team. So that was something. Loved the minor league brawl. I shouldn't probably say loved, but Wisconsin Timber Rattlers on wrestling night had a big one on Saturday night with the Lansing Lugnuts. So that's pretty fun. Wrote about that at jsonline.com. And how about the Brewers lefties against a lefty on Sunday? Sean Newcomb checks in for the Cubs. The Brewers notoriously do not hit left-handers. He gave up 6 runs, 6 hits, all to left-handers, including 2 home runs. It's a good number for. I bet they're back to league average now against lefties, after this one performance with the left-handed batters doing all of the damage there. Jace Peterson, Garrett Mitchell, Christian Yelich, Colton Wong. Was it Peterson twice, I think? Just crazy stuff. So that was certainly notable. Okay, let's go back in time now. And it's from Remember When.
Red Hot Memories, High School Beat.
All right, riffing on something else we saw that we haven't mentioned yet. Tuesday and Wednesday, the Brewers sent position players to the mound. In L.A., Tuesday, it was Victor Caratini. Did not go well. We will not discuss. Wednesday, Pablo Reyes came to the mound. 1-2-3 inning. He was throwing anywhere from 77 miles an hour to, like, was there a 30-something in there? The quote-unquote changeup? There were some really slow pitches coming in there. Pablo Reyes, 1-2-3. It's beautiful stuff. And it had me looking back at some of the more memorable pitching performances from position players in Brewers history. There aren't many that are truly memorable. They all come in the context of blowout losses, so it's not really something that most people want to remember. But going back to 1979, I found one that's super interesting. And some people may remember this game, but the Brewers had 3 position players pitch over a span of 5 innings to try to get through a blowout loss to the Kansas City Royals. Sal Bando, who is not, you know, not a nobody player, he was a very good third baseman, he came in the 4th inning. The Brewers were trailing 13-4. He checks in, there's a couple runners on, he gives up a couple runs, he admitted to throwing some spitballs, he was just doing whatever he could. I'm sure it was a very good time. George Bamberger said afterward that Bando had told him, "I can go one more, and after that, I won't be able to comb my hair." That was after he threw the 4th and the 5th, a scoreless 5th. He throws a scoreless 6th. He throws 2 scoreless innings, including a 1-2-3 inning. And I think the only base runner he allowed in the 5th came on an error, so it wasn't his fault. The Royals, you know, they're going to win anyway. Jim Gantner, we all know him, he pitches the 7th inning. He comes in, also works a scoreless frame. Buck Martinez, the catcher, works the 8th inning. He does allow a run. So at some point, the Royals go up, I think it was 17-6, or maybe it was 16-6. I'm not sure, but like then they put a pitcher back in for the 9th, Marty Patton, and he gives up 2 runs. So the position players in total gave up 3 runs over the course of 5 innings. And then with 3 of the innings thrown by Sal Bando, and then Marty Patton comes in and gives up 2 runs. Wild stuff. Crazy game. Gorman Thomas homered twice in that game, which actually tied the franchise record at the time. He had 36 homers. So that was pretty cool. But a wild game in Kansas City, August 29th, 1979. Just a weird one. Fortunately, the Brewers haven't had quite that situation where they're allowing 3 position players to pitch at a time. But that does it for Remember When. Okay! Let's finish things. Let's tear it down with Kurt Blanch. It is the take of the week.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep. Get out of here. Gone.
Have you heard that Josh Hader was traded?
That has been a topic we have thought about.
I'm just joking. I'm not going to talk about that anymore.
Okay, sounds good.
I probably could, actually. I don't want to lie and say I'm done talking about Josh Hader.
It is fertile ground.
It is forever fascinating. But I'm going to dip into the minor leagues again. Get some farm system talk going here. Carlos Rodriguez is a name that needs to be on your top 12 Brewers prospect lists.
Really?
This guy is, I believe, 19, maybe 20. Just got promoted to High A Wisconsin earlier this, you know, I think early this month, maybe late last month. Continues to shove 1.79 ERA after the latest good start. His stuff is electric. It's very good. I haven't seen him ranked very high on many prospect lists at all. And I'm here to tell you that that is wrong. There's actually two Carlos Rodriguez's that are, I believe, ranked in the Brewer system. The other one's an outfielder who's been hurt most of the year. But Carlos Rodriguez, the pitcher, JR, is a name that should be on your radar.
All right. Been looking at the top 30 lists a lot lately, especially with Mitchell up and with Frelick and Joey Weimer and Esturi Ruiz all at AAA. And I wonder if there's something to the Brewers having more success in Latin American countries. Now, that has nothing to do with Carlos Rodriguez. He is a sixth-round draft pick in 2021, so he does not apply here. But just noticing a lot of new names, a lot of guys that I hadn't really known until really at some point this season. You know, you've got a catcher by the name of Jefferson Caro, who has made his way to Appleton despite being only 19 years old, right along with Churio, of course. Jackson Churio at the top of this list, of course, but Caro has had a really nice start to his young career, even though he's just 19 years old. A new guy by the name of Luis Lara is in the top 15 if you look at MLB.com. He's only 17 years old in rookie ball. Felix Valerio, a player they traded for, that's actually a guy they got in the Keon Broxton trade. But just 21 years old, smaller guy, but he's at AA. Henry Mendez, I think we maybe have mentioned him before. He's at Appleton, only 18. He got hurt earlier this year, so we haven't seen a lot of him lately. But another guy that they signed, Hedbert Perez is a name that people have known about. He's 19. Rodriguez is 20. A guy named Eduardo Garcia, who's only 20. He's already at Advanced Class A as well. So they seem to have had more success there than in past years, and certainly it's headlined by Churio, and if he becomes the star, I think we all hope he is, then the success rate goes way, way up just on average. But a lot of these guys are really interesting. There seems to be sort of this new teenage crop of players bubbling up to supplement these guys at AAA. So it's kind of an exciting time, a little bit of an unknown. Brewer's still theoretically 2-3 years away from seeing a lot of these guys play, so it's maybe not as exciting, but definitely some new names getting in the mix this year, I've seen. All right, Kurt, any last thoughts before I send you away?
Yeah, did you guys hear about the Josh Hader trade?
I had not heard. How's Robert Gasser doing? I haven't checked in on him. He had a couple, I think he lost his second start, but he pitched well. I'm not actually sure how things are going with him, but he unfortunately will be forever connected to this Josh Hader trade. Him and Esturi Ruiz, I feel bad for these guys. They should not have to be dealing with this as such a prominent part of their story, but for Brewers fans, I'm afraid that's just going to be par for the course, I have to think.
That's the way it is.
All sometimes. Right, everybody. That is indeed. All right, folks, thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Micro Brew. Check us out again next week. We'll be back, and we'll have more to chat about. We didn't even talk about attendance, Kurt, our big story of the week. We didn't talk about it. We'll have to do that soon, and we will catch you again very soon. Bye-bye, everybody.